When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Saints fans, we're having a look at 2015 for the Saints and the big optimistic look at 2016 for them. On the whole of it, this is, let's say, halfway through the Saints rebuild.
They're building well. I think we can safely say that. They've been building towards something.
They've been very deliberate in their builds as well. They've been happy to get lots of top 20 picks. You know, they're not trying to just get the number one draft picks, which they have got. But they've said, we'd rather have picks, you know, four and five to go rather than just the big one type of stuff.
And they've traded off some of the guys who are quality players but not going to be in their next premiership side or the next finals tilt side anyway.
Well, I mean, you have a look at who they've lost over the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. You look at Luke Ball, Nick D'Alessandro, Brendan Goddard, and now you can throw in bloody big boy McAvoy.
Well, it was a championship side that just didn't get there.
Ball bounces the other way, they win.
And
twice.
And everyone was hoping for that to fucking happen.
Probably.
The bloody oath. I was still in the casino then, and I actually stopped my table for that last 5 minutes. And it was that close of a game that my players were like, all right, fair enough.
It's fair enough.
But the thing with the Saints and a young squad, like you said, with this developing, I found that a lot of the problems that you anticipate with young squads, mainly being heart, being able to run out of game and not being and being scared, was were signs that they didn't show. I found that they, for whatever reason, I think it was kind of just innate in the players that they got, didn't show those signs. And so I think that's a really good step forward for a young squad.
I think that's, you're very right, backing yourself is something that a lot of the younger players don't do consistently. They'll, in the first quarter, if they have a good run, they'll keep it going. But if that first run, they get tackled holding the ball or whatever, they tend to sort of be in two minds for the rest of the game. Whereas St Kilda, for whatever reason, the young guys seem to be able to back themselves, and if it doesn't turn out the way they want, keep cracking at it.
Yeah, they don't give up.
And they haven't had that many misses in their trades or drafts in the last couple of years as well.
Yeah.
I mean, guys like, can't think of one.
Yeah, they've got guys like, you know, Jack Billings and Luke Dunstan that, you know, high picks, not, you know, top two. They've gone, you know what, that's better than we hoped for.
I rate Jack Billings so fucking high.
Well, you look at when they recruited Jack Billings. I mean, they've got Nathan Freeman now from the Pies. And so if you look at, was it 2 years ago?
I think so.
Was that that draft? They essentially have got four top 20 picks that year with Billings, Freeman, Dunstan and Akers.
And very deliberate. That's what they wanted. It was a bulk of picks.
And I must say, all my research for the Saints podcast for this one isn't done by me at all. My best mate's a Saints supporter. So I just outsourced that and got a old mate to do all the research for me since he's got his ear to the ground.
Shout out to Team Baldwin, who are probably the only ones listening.
If we didn't do a positive one, they'd probably stab us. So
it's always that good chance. So let's have a look at then at how they went for the year. We always start off with having a look at their best wins. And I think, you know, round six against the Bulldogs is just screaming out. To be down by 50-odd points and to come back and get the win with, you know, not only just to get the win, they also they got in front with enough time left to lose it. So then they had to hang on.
And seriously, if you didn't know either team, you would swear that at halftime they just went into the change room, swapped Guernseys, and then came back out and started playing again.
It's unbelievable. Not, I mean, what were they, 55 points down?
Yeah, more or less 10 goals down.
Not only that, after halftime, Bulldogs kicked the first one. So, you know, you've gone into the sheds, you know, pretty down in yourself. Kicked two goals for a half, and then they kicked another one. It's like, oh, more of this. That's what they needed to kick themselves into gear.
But that's exactly why you stay to the end of the game. Because if you're a supporter and you see that at halftime and you go, fuck, this is bullshit, and you go home, you've missed out, mate. Your membership would have paid off right there.
If you're a Saints supporter, though, you're used to this kind of stuff.
Oh, so yeah, they've had a
you're in for the long haul.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, when doing the research for this podcast and you're trying to pick the Saints' best and worst performances, when you go through their entire season, each game could have been a best or worst performance, like just based on the stats.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Like, look at the start. If you go up to the top of their season, you've got Geno West, who gave him a Heiden that Eddie had. Well, not Heiden, but 10 points, more or less. Then you've got Gold Coast, who they beat, which could have been a best performance. They got touched up by Collingwood, which could have been a worst performance.
Good touch up by Collingwood. But even with the touch up by Collingwood, they've still kicked 10 goals.
Yeah.
Okay, you've let Collingwood kick 20, but... Yeah. It's showing that there is some offense there.
Yeah, and that's the offense wasn't sort of a problem they had because they've got Nunzi up there, who is one of the standouts for youngsters playing up forward. And luckily, he's in a team like St Kilda where he gets a go, sort of allowed Rewalt to be pushed up forward, pushed up further up the field.
The other big win I had them down for was round 15.
Yeah.
I think it's round 14, sorry, against Essendon.
Yeah.
So they put 110 points gap in between them and effectively ended James Hurd's coaching career.
Yeah.
Well, let's say they had the assist.
Well,
in that regards. I think it was 2008 or 2009. It might have been the last time that the Saints won by 100 points.
Really?
No, they probably did during 2010 when they were grand finalists in 2011.
Anyway.
Fucking ages since they've put on a massive win like this.
Yeah, and just the score score of St Kilda of 25 goals and 12 behinds is very,
very efficient.
Accurate and efficient for a very high scoring game.
It was great to watch as someone that sort of everyone's got the Saints as a feel good story. You know, you want to get them to get up there for number two.
Yeah,
And to show that when things are going their way, they could actually. Put the foot on the throat, and really make a killing of it.
And they did that. And look, Essendon have had their fair share of sympathy and haters and everything, but it is brilliant to see St Kilda just be ruthless.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see any side be ruthless unless it's playing your team.
Well, yeah.
That's one thing that pissed off about the Tigers is they could never do that. And so for a young squad to keep their composure and not sort of get a bit in awe of the moment that you're belting the shit out of Essendon and MCG, you know, it really is one of those notches in their belt.
Yeah, absolutely was. Mm-hmm. So if we're looking at the best wins, the next logical place to go is the worst losses. I think, to me, there was one that really stood out, and that was Anzac Day against Carlton over in New Zealand.
Which
I think they're finished with the New Zealand experiment now.
They should be. I think they got 12,000 people out to watch the game, which on Anzac Day is fucking ridiculous.
It's better than you get to a regular round at... most places.
Yeah, but this is Anzac Day. You know what I mean? True. This is built on footy. Like, if you want to get Anzac Day seats for the footy game, generally you have to get them at the start of the season as soon as they come out.
They're competing with the Rugby League Anzac Day games too, aren't they?
Are they?
Over in New Zealand, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. There you go.
There's no way Rugby League over there isn't having Anzac Day games, for sure.
I didn't realise that a rugby...
Regardless, rugby if day. You put that on at Etihad Stadium... You're getting 40.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't matter who plays.
So you got 12 over there, plus God knows what they had to spend in marketing it and all that kind of gear.
Yeah.
But I think was it at Wellington? Yeah, Wellington. Yeah. Yeah. Wellington Council pulled the pin.
And with the conversion rate, 12,000 is only about 8,900 anyway.
Close to that, yeah. But this is a game where they had the ascendancy halfway through, and then Carlton actually looked good. I think it was the one time for the year Carlton actually did look good.
Yeah.
And... it's a little bit, you needed somebody to just, I don't know, throw some weight around or something.
Yeah.
And maybe that is one thing they're missing, is that hardness.
They might have got half pissed on the plane over there. It might have helped.
That's probably, probably hardness. Hardness through duty free. They should have got pissed before the game as well as on the way over there. Maybe they would have been a bit more tough. I don't know. A
bit of something. Yeah. I know that they can get, St Kilda of history are getting themselves in trouble when they start to try and play hard on and off the field, but yeah. Sometimes you need a little bit of that unsociable football, Robert Walls calls it.
Maybe it could have been the trip over there or something, but I think it was 6-2 in the last quarter, which pretty much did them in.
What is sociable football if we've got unsociable?
Well, it's what they were playing. It's the opposite, isn't it?
Well, sociable, do you rock up and say, mate, let's just put the Barbie right here at the point post?
That's correct. Sociable football is B-grade.
You got the beer cans hidden.
The pub footy league.
Exactly. You've got the fattest bloke at full forward because you sit him in the goal square and pop it up to him.
Who gets a case for every goal he kicks.
Exactly.
I think there's one of them in every regional league around the country.
Well, we did well out of that.
It actually is the unprofessional football league.
Yeah, it's the pub league.
Yeah. Oh,
where they had a time trial for their preseason 4 years ago, and they haven't finished it yet. They're still waiting on it. The other bad loss I had was round 15 against GWS. The only reason is they kicked 6 goals, 13, so that's a poor turnout. But this came the week after they've put 110 points on Essendon.
Yeah.
So you'd hope to have that form carry through a little bit.
Yeah.
That's not to say GWS are a bad side. I mean, they didn't play finals, and at home, I'd probably pick GWS to win anyway.
Yep.
But not by 6 goals.
Yeah, and not especially St Kilda kicking 6 goals, 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to just kick 6 goals in the game, you're not going to win. You cannot win kicking just 6 goals. But especially when we've just pumped up St Kilda's ability to score, to have that return, pretty disappointing.
And that's the worst thing, is seeing you kick 6 goals, but you kick 13 points, you can see that you could have won that game.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of accuracy.
Yeah.
It's a different result. Just interesting, I noticed that was their equal lowest score for the... it wasn't. Sorry, in the last round they kicked 4 goals, 6. So the last 2 weeks, they kicked 8 goals... What's that? 8 goals, 20. Against two top four teams. Geez, on your hindsight, that's a rough run home for the Saints.
What, going from Port, Frio, over at Frio, Frio in Melbourne, North, Geelong, Sydney, West Coast. You're playing finalists in a team that should have been a finalist.
I think even when we were following the season last year in our weekly ones, we said that the Geelong game was their last hurrah for the year. It was their last chance to get a big one.
Yeah.
And they ended up with a draw, which is... almost a big one.
Yeah.
But a draw where they outscored their opponent.
Yeah, they had more scoring shots, but it just didn't get over the line. So it was almost that moral victory anyway.
Yeah. And especially since Geelong were ninth, looking at eighth, I think, around that time.
They still had a chance. That, in hindsight, might have cost Geelong a spot.
Could have, yeah. Yep.
So, you know, if you know any Geelong supporters, Saints, you know, get into them. You fucked up their year for them. So who are the big standouts for them for this year?
Well...
when I say this year, I mean last year.
Like we touched on earlier, for me, Jack Billings is developing, but his ability to kick the ball is fantastic. He's got a massively long kick, and he tends to find open players, and he can shoot from a long way back.
Yeah, Jack Billings definitely be a standout. Obviously, there's Nunes as well, who I thought provided a good target up forward, sort of allowed Rewalt to come up and start attacking the goals facing forward.
I had Armitage, who
Armitage definitely.
I think he won their medal, which the name just escapes me right now.
He pretty much Nathan Jones Molly the whole season.
Medal. Sorry,
said he pretty much Nathan Jones the whole season.
Yeah, if he was in a team that won more games, he'd probably go a lot closer to All Australia.
Yeah,
but some of those games that we just mentioned, their biggest wins, he's getting nearly 40 touches.
Yeah,
and he's fairly decent with the ball too. Like, you trust him.
Yeah, and turning the game around on his own hand, on his own boot.
Yeah,
he's one of those guys that brings other players in, which is what you want in your mids. It's just that ability to have players that are having a bad time, give them a bit of the ball, get it back and get it moving. And
especially with such a young team, they need that leadership there. When they've traded out a lot of leadership going into deep into the drafts. I also had Josh Bruce because he took...
Yeah.
I still believe mark of the year in round one.
I was saying Nunes, but I meant Bruce.
I thought you might have, but I was going to let it go.
I reckon the Saints fans might have known that too.
And my lasting memory of that grab is Nick Riewoldt in front of it.
Yeah.
Down there waiting for the crumb,
yep.
Like a good boy that he is. And he's just gone, you beauty. Put their hands up. Yeah. I can't believe it. I had front row seats.
There's passing the torch, and then there's someone going, I'll take this torch, thank you very much.
Absolute screamer. And I couldn't. I did not know that Josh Bruce was an AFL footballer before this year.
Yeah, me neither.
And he kicked a couple of bags of 5 and 6, which shows that Riewoldt's still there and still doing everything that you'd expect him to do.
And I think that's what makes the Saints look so good, is their young players doing things that 6-7-year-old players should be doing. But there's just a bit of consistency and a few little maybe tactical areas that they have. But the thing is, it's easier to straighten those out than try and teach young kid talent.
6 or 7 years old?
Six or 7 years in. And they had a lot of other players that just weren't bad. Like Jack Stevens, was this his first year back from his massive knee?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Sean Dempster had a good year. Delaney had good years.
Yep.
So they had Luke Dunstan and Eli Templeton. Eli Templeton had, I thought, a chance he could have gone missing.
This
year, but then he'd sort of pop up and have a good couple of games. You thought, okay, there you
Especially
go.
Especially when he needed to as well, yeah.
So they didn't have any...
How do you name a kid Eli these days?
Because you're Jewish.
I don't know. That's more Amish.
Yeah, all right. Your story.
Run with it. I've got to say, Sam Fisher had a good year as well. Mm. Because they're an undersized back line, and he's having to play on some of the monsters down there and direct everything that's going on down back.
And didn't have a whole lot of support this season.
No.
But
no.
The thing is, the Saints have recruited pretty well in regards to backline talent, so he will definitely have support coming through.
I think they've recruited well in talent. I don't know about they've recruited well in muscle.
Yeah.
Like, these days, mobile backlines are sort of the standard. You'll have, you know, teaming up where the ball's going to end up, trying to crumb and rebound from back, but you still need that thug back there.
But they're hard to recruit. They're more built players that form into those roles.
Full forwards that get fat.
Yeah, sometimes.
So let's move on to 2016 then. When we look to the ins and outs, there is a big fucking asterisk here, which is a shame for Saints. They traded, was it pick 4 or pick 5?
Yeah, I can't remember.
A pick 5, I'm pretty sure, for Jake Carlisle. Yeah. And now he's not playing for this year. But look, you know, that's the caveat. They're hoping that he'll hang around for a lot longer. And like we said, an undersized back line. Carlisle, who's frustrated playing forward for Essendon, wants to play centre-half back.
Yeah.
So they got him to fill that role. He's just going to have to wait 12 months.
I mean, the silver lining to that is that a lot of players carry injuries through from season to season, and they never quite get themselves right. Yeah. At least now you've got a chance for Carlisle to, you know, he's going to be trained on his own for 12 months, but he'll be able to be injury-free as much as possible.
I wonder if they're going to keep the club-imposed sanction on him for going the Charlie during the off-season.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I think he got a couple of games club suspension, and now he's got 22 games from ASADA.
Yes, so we can't play to round 4 2017.
You'd probably rough. Call it square and tell
I
him.
I've got to say, you go, mate, I think you've learnt.
Take a few shifts at the pub and we'll sort it out.
Don't Charlie you want at the end of the season.
He's working construction, actually.
Is he?
He's got a job during this off-season. He's
constructing a personality.
I don't know. I like to see him on the job, you know. This house is fucked.
He's sitting there, go, stop.
Who else we got? We got Nathan Freeman, which we spoke about across from Collingwood. Handy player, but I think he's also in that same age bracket as the rest of their bulk of draftees.
And his problem was hamstrings, I think. Really not very good. So if he can, maybe a bit of time off, done him well, could recuperate. But definitely had talent. Definitely showed a very good ability to read the ball. So if he can stay fit and healthy and his hamstrings are rehabilitatable, if that's a fucking word, then you can expect him to probably really fill a role with the Saints.
Just thinking too, he's been at Collingwood for a couple of years. I wonder if Richardson was an assistant when he was at Collingwood as well.
Oh yeah,
it could be. So it might be a little bit of carryover
inside
there.
Inside knowledge.
Could be.
Well, there were always good raps on him. It was mainly just his injuries that sort of forced him out.
So on the outs then, and this is where I think that they haven't done too badly. They've had to move some older talent on.
They've got rid of the Cloggers.
Schneider was unlucky, but he played his 200-odd games, and I think he was very handy. So he's retired. Mm-hmm. Ahmed Saad, who managed to wear his suspension and come back and be okay.
Yeah.
He's a clogger.
Yeah. I saw him play a couple of VFL games, and he was good for VFL.
Yep.
But the difference between VFL and AFL is still massive.
Yeah, it's huge.
Like, you can be good in VFL, but unless you're making the AFL coach say, I need this guy on my side, he's cutting him apart, then you really haven't done your career any favours.
Well, I mean, sitting on the sidelines for 18 months
doesn't
help.
Well, hopefully Carlisle will come out of that better.
But, I mean, he still might come back, Saad. You never know. And the other one was Farron Ray, who I was a little bit surprised because I thought he was a handy player. They got rid of him.
The approach they've had is, will Farron Ray be in the next finals tilt side? And the answer is no.
That's probably right. I mean, if you're looking at finals in the next 2 to 3 years, maybe he's there, because I think he's 28, 29.
He's getting on, yeah.
So I thought, a little bit close, but I thought he was worth one more year. But anyway, he's gone off in North Melbourne and picked him up for nothing.
Well, yeah, he's an older bloke, so North were very interested.
Yeah, like they do.
They've got him on the boomer juice, so he'll be playing until the year 2048.
So the other way you get players in is obviously through the draft. We can have a look at their draft picks. But, I mean, we've got Jade Gresham, Brennan White, and the big one is Bailey Rice. The big one because he was a father-son pick who had rights to go to Carlton or St Kilda,
yep.
And he picked Saints. So that's something that, somebody from the outside has said, I want to go here rather than there.
Yeah.
I mean, rather than there is Carlton, who are a fucking bastard case.
Yes, yep.
But the point is that he did pick you over somebody. So you're not 18th on his list.
The good thing is, you know that all the other clubs are circling around as a Wietering, who they picked up. Carlton?
Yeah, Carlton's Wietering.
No one is going to be out of there in at least 2 to 3 years.
He looked bloody good in the NAB too, Wietering, in a game where Carlton got thumped.
So he could end up in a St Kilda or someone like that who has draft picks to trade off.
2 or 3 years, that's all you got to wait. Yeah.
And I think with their drafts, with the way they went last year, I think you'll see the drafts they got last year really stepping up into the team as opposed to this year.
Yeah.
I think
they
did pretty well out of that draft. So got a couple of inside tips. Apparently, Jack Sinclair is Jack Billings' best mate. Ended up at the Saints. Played last year and was
he's a rookie. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Kicked a goal every game. So
got
the ability to step up and be a servant to that forward line, which will really allow Rewalt to come up forward. Well,
the coaches think the same. They promoted him from rookie list, so they're expecting him to make an impact this year.
Yeah. And, I mean, Lukey Dunstan had a bit of a year off, but his first year was a standout year. And maybe he's got a bit more attention in the second year, so it'd be interesting to see bounces back from that and what he's done in the offseason to rectify sort of the pressure that was applied to him last year.
So on to their draw for 2016 then. Their double-up games are against North, Bulldogs, Essendon, Carlton, Melbourne.
Yeah.
Something interesting about those five teams, they're all Victorian-based.
Yeah.
So the good thing for the Saints, I don't think they have back-to-back trips all year interstate.
With those double-ups, Essendon, Carlton, Melbourne, you'd expect them to put them away.
Well, Melbourne's a good one. Because I think that Melbourne and Saints are at the same sort of rate of growth. I mean, Melbourne finished with more wins last year.
I'd put St Kilda's momentum ahead of Melbourne. I think Melbourne are sort of... Their draw will depend on how they finish. They're not going to hassle finals at all. They might be able to overcome some of the lower sides, but they're not going to hassle any of the top eight.
Well, I mean, that's how it goes, though. I mean,
if it
could be that I think that the... Melbourne are assembling a really good side. Yeah. I'm just seeing how they finished on the ladder last year. So 7 wins. So they only had one more win than St Kilda.
Well, St Kilda had that draw, so they had the same amount of losses.
Yeah.
But my money...
Very close.
If I was St Kilda, I would be gutted if they finished below Melbourne in 2016. Because I think they have a much greater potential than Melbourne at this current moment.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it is good that they've got a good draw for them. And you are right in pointing out Melbourne because, like we said, they're both so close this year and I predict they're going to be close again next year. So they've got two chances to try themselves against them.
Yeah.
I think that'd be their pass mark. If they want to go ahead, they need to be winning both of those games against either Western Bulldogs or North Melbourne. I think North and Western Bulldogs are those teams that can turn up on the day or not. If they can steal a win in the first leg, they could come into the second leg pretty confident and give them a damn good shake and probably even take the chocolates. So to me, those two double ups are where their season's decided, whether they're going to be thereabouts or whether they're going to be just happy to rebuild.
Well, we expect them to give Essendon and Carlton a scene too.
Oh, they'll give them a hiding. I think Essendon versus Carlton will be the game that no one bothers turning up to, including the players.
But to have double-ups against both Essendon and Carlton means that their percentage should get a nice little boost.
Yeah.
And when they're finishing, you know, maybe around the 10th, 11th mark, maybe they're level with wins with Melbourne. If they've got those little percentage boosters in the bank, not a little bad card to have.
Yeah. And when you're looking at teams who, I mean, obviously we've been talking about St Kilda having a young squad and what they would aspire to be. You'd think that the path for them to get in the top eight would be similar to where the Bulldogs went to get there, where young players stepped up and performed key roles that sort of got them over the line.
Yeah.
So I think the big game they'll have or the yardstick they would look to measure themselves against would be against the Bulldogs, which I think is round two.
Round two.
Which I think actually might be going to that game. So
I think, we are too. And it's good time to go into the key games. Not only is it a good measuring stick for them, but the big Rusciutto is...
The root.
Hell. Nick Riewoldt is looking for that being game number 300.
Really?
So, yeah, when those tickets go on sale next Friday morning, we better jump on them.
So if you go to that game, would that mean you've watched three 300s?
And oh, 400.
No, 400s.
Yeah. I've seen one 400.
One 400,
yeah.
That's
the one Boomer played in Brisbane.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But we might get to see his breakthrough. But anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. That is a massive game in round two for St Kilda. Not just on the season, but a chance to give an absolute champion a good send.
Yep.
I was going to say send off, but it's round two. He's got another whole season to go.
Yeah, and it seems like the Bulldogs and St Kilda are the ones that are fighting to make Essendon Stadium their own, because no one really has yet. It's always been the away teams that have got the biggest crowds there. Like, I remember going to see North Melbourne and Richmond, and you could see the little section of North Melbourne members, and the rest of it was all yellow and black.
Well, it's interesting because Essendon, I think they've come the closest.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're going to have a shit year this year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Carlton too.
Yeah.
So out of all the tenants, you've got North, West, and Saints. You've got a chance to really say, nah, it's our fucking ground. And this is the best year to do it because the two wealthy clubs are going to be 17th, 18th.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Nick Revol, he's going to play his 300th and finish out the season. Do you reckon he hands over the reins at the end?
It's his choice. I think it's 100% his choice. I know that they'll always go back and say it's up to the team and, you know, the leadership group and the coaches. Yep. But I think for somebody that's done everything he's done for the club and the way he's done it, you know, put his body on the line. Yep.
And he's still developing his game, like, as he grows older, you know what I mean? He's realizing he can't do as much as what he used to do.
His tank hasn't got any smaller.
Yeah, no. Like, he'll run a whole game, yeah.
It's more than any other player, you've got to go to a game to appreciate what he does. Especially in, you know, a side that hasn't won many games in the last couple of years.
Well, we've talked before. He plays a lot like Richo used to.
Yeah.
In that his ability to be mobile and offer 7-8 options every time.
Yeah. And hunt the ball.
Ball's coming through. It's brilliant. His second, third, fourth, fifth efforts. Brilliant play to watch. And take a screamer.
Doesn't go off at his teammates nearly as enough as Richo did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he can work on that.
But they got BJ for that, so.
Well, they used to, yeah. He probably still goes off at him. Cool. Yeah. You fucking pass it to me. You're not on my team anymore, cunt. Fair enough. The other big games for the year I've got is rounds 22 and 23. 22 is I got against the Tigers because there is still an outside chance. Like you say, like the Bulldogs last year, they could sneak into the eight, in which case round 22 against the Tigers could be very telling for them.
Yeah, and look, when you look at what they've got and what they did last season and how you'd hope that they would progress, for a best-case scenario, you would think they'd be fighting for that 6th down to 8th spot.
We'll try and sneak into the last spot.
Yeah, they're definitely up there as contenders. And it's going to be close as well when you look at Geelong likely taking a huge step forward as well. So it makes it even tighter around that area, which is great for footy and great for spectators.
They've got a good draw. They could do it.
Yeah.
Speaking of tight around that area, what do you reckon about the Pride Cup?
What's that?
They played against the Swans.
Yeah.
Last year was the first time.
What is it? It's a gay pride cup, I guess, challenge match. It's in Etihad this year. Obviously, St Kilda being known as the suburb itself being welcoming to
prostitutes.
Well, that too.
Well, they're
but,
on
all communities.
They're on both sides of the bar at the Prince, so let's put it that way.
But
I don't really get it. Like, I'm not offended. I'm glad you find any way to try and market a game. But that's the way I look at it. It's a way to market a game.
Yeah.
But having said that, I'm probably not the people they're trying to draw in with it. Anyway, I'm already sold, so I'm going to go watch the footy. So they're trying to draw in a new crowd. If that's the way they do it, it gets more people through the gates. If it gets PR points, who cares? It's no skin off my nose whatsoever.
I mean, at least they've played it straight, if whatever pun you want to make, in that they haven't tried to pander. As in, they haven't gone, well, it's 2-for-1 Chardonnays or some bullshit. They said, no, this is footy. We're focusing on this crowd if you guys want to come along, and you're more than welcome, but we're not going to pink wash anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, the jury's probably still out. Let's see what happens at the ground. They could still have some shit in the works. But yeah, like I was saying, I couldn't give a shit. I mean, if the game's going to be good, I'll go watch it, whatever the cause is, all for it. No, yeah, I've got nothing, yeah.
That's what I mean. If it brings another section of the community to the footy, good, all for it. But I'm not offended by it, and I'm not enticed by it either. It's just, there's so many themed games that it's hard to get excited about them all.
Well, I think the thing I like about it is that somewhere out there in AFL land, under 15s or whatever, there's probably, statistically you'd have to say there's a couple of gay kids running around the footy. They maybe not out, whatever. But this sort of thing lets them know that that's okay. You can still be gay and be involved in footy and go play for whatever team you want.
And let's be honest, footy change rooms are gay as fuck.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Like the amount of, yeah.
It is the most homosexual place in the damn world.
Yeah, and I think the good thing about this is that the gay community will be able to go there and they'll be able to boot anyone because no one's going to tell them that they're being discriminatory. So I'm all for it. I think if the general AFL community teams up with the gay community, we can go back and start booing people on the field. So I'm a big supporter. In fact, I've convinced myself I'm in.
You're in. Yep.
I'm in. Yep.
Do they played the Matty Cup last year as well?
Yeah,
against the Tigers. I wonder if that's going to be an annual thing now or if it was a one-off.
I honestly hope so.
What was it for again? Yeah. I don't know, Maddie, yeah.
Nick Riewoldt's sister.
Cystic fibrosis, cancer. Was it?
Yeah. Jack Riewoldt's.
What? Cystic cancer?
Oh, I thought it was cancer. No, cystic. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was Nick Riewoldt's sister died of cancer.
Cancer.
Who is Jack Riewoldt's cousin.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew it was her, but I didn't know what she actually died of.
I believe so, but I could be wrong.
The warm-up they had to that... the lead-up they had to that game where they both went to the ground together and... You know, they had such emotion about the whole thing. And all through the season, you were seeing them sort of at every win, sort of saluting the sky. I thought it was a brilliant football story and just shows how much of themselves they were giving to the game, the team, everything. I would love for it to become a yearly event. I think it's brilliant for cancer awareness. It's fantastic they can acknowledge the personal story of these two fantastic players. I hope it keeps going.
There's a reason for it.
Yeah.
It's not manufactured or anything like that. And it was something that the players themselves, I believe, went to the club and said, this is what we want to do.
Yeah. I mean, if those players retire, then you know maybe you wouldn't have it.
But. Maybe it is. Who knows? But, I mean, it's like the pink test in the at the SCG.
McGrath Foundation,
which I think is day two or day three of the test is the pink day.
Yeah.
Like, McGrath's obviously retired, but there's still a reason for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it came organically, which is what I like about the Madeline game for that reason. So there's still a reason to go on with it. So, yeah, hopefully it does. I'm not sure if it's on for next year or not.
I think it's a fantastic addition to the football calendar, and not just that, the social calendar, the cultural calendar of Melbourne in general.
And the good thing is that the Shane Warne Foundation is going to have fuck all to do with it.
Got fuck all to do with anything, I think.
Yeah, so funds probably get there.
I'm getting sued. Get me out of here.
So on the Saints... players' side of things, who's due for a big year this year?
Well, there's a lot, isn't
there? Well, the safe bet's Armitage. He's going to have a fantastic year because he's that damn talented.
I want to see him back it up and push all Australia.
I also want to see Billings with a full season because obviously, you know, only played 9 games in 2015. I think he could be an absolute superstar. So if he can get through 20-plus games...
Just keep himself tidy.
Yeah, we could see him just dominating.
Yeah, I think Luke Dunstan is another one that you want to step up after more or less having a year off.
A few more goals out of him.
Came out in the first year, in his first year, and did well. Got a bit found out in his second year, so you expect him to make those adjustments and come back really to put himself up there as AFL leadership potential.
Last year we had two, I'll say, unknown forwards really put their names into lights, and being Josh Bruce and Cam McCarthy.
Yeah.
Now, we know what's happened with Cam McCarthy, and he's probably not going to play a game of footy this year. And if he does, it'll be just, you know, oh, great, good to see you out there again,
mate,
before he fucks off to Freo.
It'll be mental health week or whatever he's trying to pass off as.
So it's up to Josh Bruce, then, to carry the flag for unheralded forwards and show that it wasn't just a fluke last year.
Yep.
He's going to get more attention, especially if Nick's playing up the ground more.
Which they've indicated they were going to try, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then also that means there's a space for Paddy McCartan.
Yep.
If he lines up for his first game this year.
Yeah.
I think you're very right. Like how Bruce deals with that attention is going to be fantastic to watch. Because you get some players who, once they become that genuine option, they get a bit overawed by the situation and they sort of back off. But other guys just go, nah, I'm fucking taking this on. And they have a brilliant run. So... He could turn out to be exactly what they need and become the player you want him to be, or he could fold.
Just what those one or two goals a game. Yep. You know, 40 goals for a season, I think it'd be great for Bruce.
One or two with the occasional splash.
Yeah.
Where he pops up for 4 or 5 and like, oh, wow.
Well, I mean, we got 2 games against Essendon and Carlton. So they haven't got a back line, either of them.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he might be lining up on Wiedering.
Yeah, it could be two. And you'd like to see them just go one-on-one just to see how they go. Yeah.
And Wiedering's a massive lad for a first-year player. Yep. So that'd be a great matchup, actually.
If he's playing fullback, he'd be knackered by that time.
I've also got Mav Weller down. Because I think if there is a player to step up, to have that little bit of mongrel about him, that little bit of muscle, excuse me, especially down back, it might be him.
Yeah.
I think he's maturing very well into this side. Be that sort of... that general across half-back moving into the midfield and assisting Fisher in that role. So I'm hoping for a big year for Mav Weller.
Yeah, and I mean, he's mature as well. He's 23 years old, I think so. So
yeah, he's not a rookie anymore.
Yeah, and so like you said, you look at him to be really stepping up and taking ownership of the back line, which they need to do.
And moving into his prime.
Yeah.
And I've got a feeling he's a bit of a UFC fan as well, so if he can...
yeah, he is too, that's right.
Yeah. I've spoken to him on Twitter a few times.
A few tweets to him.
So if he can, you know, bring some of that Conor McGregor into the back lines. Yeah. Or Nate Diaz, you know, depending on the week.
Well, that's,
bring Misha Tate along.
And also...
just cause.
Yeah, I think Saints want to stay away from any controversy they can.
Yeah.
I put Shane Savage down as well, because I thought he looked like an absolute bust in... Maybe it wasn't Anzac Day this year, but Anzac Day last year.
Yeah.
He was, when I say last year, I mean 2014.
Yeah.
He had an absolute shocker.
Yeah.
But I've always liked him at Hawthorn. He's got a bigger boot than anyone gives him credit for.
Yeah.
And I thought he started to find his groove or settle in this year and had a couple of really good games.
Yep.
So now he should be pushing into, you know, that sort of best five or six players at the Saints.
Yeah.
And looking to, I don't think he is a future captain, but he should be in that discussion.
Yeah,
if he's good enough.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's not yet.
The one player that I thought needs to stand up is, well, not needs to stand up, but really needs to do a lot of work this year will be Sam Fisher, just because the holes that the Saints had were backline related, and they've recruited some really good talent in the back lines. I mean, you got Hugh Goddard, who's still young, who's going to be a key defender for them. You've got Jimmy Webster, who's been on the radar, but you look at him being a key person in the back lines. Who else has guys told me that they've got?
Well, I mean, that's what they recruited Carlisle for, and you've got one more year without him.
Yeah.
So Fisher's going to have to play tall again.
Yeah, and you've got to teach them how to play at the AFL level, because like we've been saying, there's a huge leap going from AFL to the sort of subcategories.
Well, what hurts them, though, is they can't get anything out of Carlisle. He can't have any contact with the players.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Yeah. You want him to play. You don't want him to have an influence.
They have that rule anyway, so
they're very prepared for that one. He gets put back in the box afterwards.
So if they're the big years out of the players for the Saints, who's on the chopping block? And I found this really difficult.
Yeah,
because
so did I.
They've gradually weaned out their senior players who were broken down or valuable enough to get high draft picks.
Yeah.
So they've almost got their list.
Yeah, I agree. I mean...
Well, if Carlisle was in, I'd say Fisher's on the chopping block, but he's not.
But he's too senior. You need him. Even if Carlisle was in, that's great.
Yep.
It's like Hawthorn getting Spud Frawley so that Josh Gibson didn't have to play on the Monsters.
Yeah.
So that's why they got Carlisle, so Fisher didn't have to play on the Monsters, and he can be that general down back.
Yeah.
But now he's going to have to be the key backman again.
Yeah, and I mean, you look for the people around him to be getting help, like the guards and that. So even if he's on the chopping block, he's still got a role to play to teach the other players. But I think if St Kilda's youngsters that they've got pegged for the back line, like the ones we mentioned...
If they stand up,
then he's got to start looking at, shit, hope I'm a good backline coach, because that's where I could be next year.
I put... So after all that, there's only one name I could think of, and that was Sam Gilbert.
Yeah.
He's a bit iffy sometimes with the ball in hands. You're a bit worried about what he does.
Yeah.
But his size and athleticism, he could be a lot better than what he is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying he's definitely not as big as a spud as Jesse White.
Yeah.
But at his worst, he can be.
Yeah, and the other players they've got who do similar roles that are a bit younger and a bit more fresh, it will make it hard for him as well. You've got Jack Looney and people like that who are going to be nipping at his heels to try and take his spot.
But that's it. They are only nipping at his heels because he's 6'10".
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever he bloody is.
Yeah.
And he can move well, but you want more from him. He needs to be really demanding his spot.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the type of problems that St Kilda are trying to have, where...
Yep.
we have to put out someone that we don't want to put out.
Yeah.
And that's going to be where they progress.
Yeah, you always want to be in that position, like, who do I drop instead of who can I pull up?
Yeah, like, shit, I'm going to hurt someone's feelings, God damn it.
So after all that, where do we see him in 2016?
Well, I actually have them finishing 15th, but looking at their last four rounds, where they've got Carlton at home, Carlton away, sorry, which is in Melbourne anyway, Sydney in Melbourne, Richmond in Melbourne, Brisbane in Melbourne. You could pencil them in for a comfortably Brisbane and Carlton, I'd say, and they could definitely hassle Richmond or Sydney. So I might have undersold them, but for whatever reason, I've got them at 15th.
15th. So that, in 2015, they were 14th with six wins. You got them 15th. Where you got them, Ben?
Yeah, and that's the what you were saying, Josh, I think is 100% true. If they find consistency across four quarters, then look out, because they could finish like anywhere from fifth down. But I think by memory, I had them at 14th.
You've got them 11th.
11th. 11th, yeah. Definitely 11th.
I think you're a lot, you're closer than I am. I'll give you that much.
Yeah. So I think they'll be fighting for that eighth spot, yeah.
I think I've got them 13th.
Yeah.
So I think that they are going to improve, but I don't know by how much. So essentially, I think that their percentage is going to help. But 13th, I think if they finished any lower than 13th, they'd have to be disappointed on the season.
Yeah.
So 13th, I'm really saying, is their worst case scenario. I can see them sneaking into the eight, but not much higher.
And that's it. When you're looking at where they're going to finish, you're sort of balancing against the teams that are going to be around, and you try and think of reasons why they would finish above those teams.
Yeah.
And with St Kilda, the reasons why you think they'll finish above those teams are still ifs. If this happens, if they be consistent, if a couple of players step up. So it's really tough to figure out how they're actually going to go.
Well, I think it'll be Gold Coast, Collingwood, Adelaide. Those guys are where St Kilda should be, amongst there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but it could be a raffle. And, you know, you can throw maybe poor Bulldogs North Melbourne in that group as well. You have a good season, you're up in finals. You have a bad season.
Yeah. You know.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're kind of worried about what went wrong.
Look, if they drop any one of the four games they play against Essendon or Carlton, that should be a massive slap in the face to them.
Yeah, yeah.
If they drop one of those games, then they need a win over a top four side, like a big win.
Yeah, yeah.
And not against, you know, Ross Lyon's resting Frio late in the year, which they don't get this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, 13th is the worst case scenario I've seen. But if they snuck inside of the eight, happy days.
Yep, yeah. And every chance to do it. And even if they don't, you're still going to be positive if they finish around that mark for St Kilda, because you don't see them going backwards in the next couple of years.
They're on the right track.
Yeah.
If they finish top 10, damn good season.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, that's it for the Saners.
Yeah, good luck, guys.
Peace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.